I'm your host, Frankie, and with me, as always,
Jeremy David King.
So strap in, smash that pedal, and ride with us down the paranormal highway.
Let's debunk and find the truth behind every ghost story in the world of transportation.
Welcome to Haunted Garage.
Let's rev it.
We're already here, Jeremy. We're at episode six.
Six.
Right? Yeah.
Is it three of them?
Six.
Sign of the devil.
We're getting some good feedback. People are not as scared as they want to be.
Oh, should I take my shirt off?
Well, we are covered. This is the LEMP series, right? So we don't really have, aside from creepy suicides...
Right.
We don't really have anything that's, you know, jumps out at us. I don't think they've ever filmed a movie in the LEMP Mansion either. Like a real movie.
Oh, yeah. Like a haunted house type? Yeah. No.
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 So we thought, you know, now that you know a little bit about, we've debunked the Monkey Boy.
He is out.
We can put it to rest. What we did say that it is possible that there could be the ghost of a boy in the LEMP Mansion.
And his name could be Zeke.
Yes.
But it's not Zeke LEMP.
It's not Zeke LEMP. That we've concluded on, that we can put a fork in and move on. We've also talked about the LEMP Mansion as a whole and the ghosts that haunt.
Oh, yeah. And there's several things that we can't necessarily, like, attribute to the LEMPs.
Right.
That happened there, especially during the time period of 1950 to 75.
Which we also covered.
Right.
So... what I want to do now is kind of focus on the suicides as they happened.
Okay.
So it would only be rightfully obvious to start with William LEMP Sr.
Correct.
But I do want to talk about another LEMP suicide that's interesting, but it happens in the 1500s.
Yes.
And we're going to have another podcast actually do the intro for that. And what they do is they do radio theater. So in a couple weeks here... we're actually going to have another podcast do our intro for us because they are actual theater actors that sit in a studio and they give you Radio 30 like from the 1920s.
Super cool.
Right. So it's not like Christmas Story with Little Orphan Annie. It's not going to be like that, like creepy and corny. Right? Don't forget to drink your Ovaltine.
A crummy commercial?
Son of a... So...
wait, can we say that?
No.
Okay.
I'll beep it out.
Beep.
So without further ado, I think, Jeremy, at this point, I should kind of go over once again, William.
Yeah.
Okay.
And totally.
Adam William. And then we'll try to get into, like, well, what happened? What drove him to kill himself? Now, we've heard it last episode. We talked about, okay, the beloved son, Frederick, did this.
Right.
But there's more to that, right? There's more to the story. We talked about Frederick, his best friend. We talked a little bit about the weirdness in their relationship that no one can actually prove. But every time you talk about it, somebody does.
Yeah, somebody's always talking about it. And it's like, where's the proof? This is,
right,
fake news.
Exactly. And it always kind of comes back to people just wanting to speculate and make more of a situation than it actually is. So I think I should start right now from the beginning.
I think that sounds like a good idea.
The LEMP family crafted the first German lager beer in America. Johann Adam LEMP arrived in the U.S. in 1836 and settled in St. Louis in 1838. At the location where the arch stands today, Adam opened a small grocery store where he sold his German lager beer brewed in the Missouri cave systems.
But we've already talked about this, Franklin.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to kind of reiterate. Remember, we're supposed to make everybody a LEMP expert.
All right.
Okay. On with the show?
On with the show.
Cave temperatures remain relatively constant, making them ideal for brewing lager. Adam's beer quickly outsold his other offerings, prompting him to focus solely on selling beer by 1840. With his growing success, he could send for his son William LEMP and open a saloon on the same premises called LEMP's Hall. In 1845, more than 45,000 Germans had settled in St. Louis.
Hold up. Wait a second. Something ain't right.
Why?
Because...
45,000 Germans?
Yes.
No, it wasn't World War II. I mean, these were different type of Germans.
This is World War I Germans?
No, you're pre.
Oh.
This is after they lose the revolution and they come to St. Louis because St. Louis has the same topography as Germany. They have the caves.
It's like Bavaria.
Exactly. They have the rolling hills. They're in the foothills. They have the caves. They can basically make lager beer and other stuff that they did in Germany. So they were very acquainted with the land already, and they could grow and do the things they were doing in Germany, but only living free.
And they could still wear lederhosen.
Can we get on with the show?
Sure.
To put this into perspective, Adam was already brewing beer when Adolphus Busch was just 1 year old. By 1850, 24 brewers in the city produced 60,000 barrels of beer. This number has increased to 40 brewers and 189,000 barrels per year by 1860. Adam acquired what is known as Lemp's Cave, where he would haul the beer from the brewery to the cave in wagons.
I thought Anheuser-Busch was the first one to use Clydesdales.
They'll tell you that on the tour, but as you know, Adolphus Busch was only 1 year old when Adam was brewing beer. So even though the relationship between Adolphus and William were very close, a lot of people forget the fact that the Lemps had started everything, including the Clydesdales. We even have images on Corner of the Macabre right now.
Look at that, won't you now?
Little known fact, August Busch actually would kill himself on February 13th, 30 years on the same day as William Lemp.
How come that's not on the tour?
Can we get...
As Adam established himself in the beer market, his son, William, graduated from St. Louis University and joined the Union Army. He fought in the Civil War with Missouri's 3rd Infantry. He later joined Adam's brewery, which he named the Western Brewery. After starting as a beer brewer and foreman, William would take over the business upon his father's death in 1862. Adam passed away at his home due to complications from cirrhosis of the liver.
I thought he died of suicide in 1864.
That's what some terrible ghost tour people would say, only to create more salacious stories. But the truth is, we have the death certificate, and it's on Corner of the Macabre. So you should check that out, Jeremy.
And it's kind of shocking that a brewer died of cirrhosis.
The house, which was the original Lemp Mansion, was razed years ago. William inherited the brewery from his father, who had also brought his cousin, Charles Brewer, into the business. After a few years, William bought out Charles for $8,000 and renamed the brewery William J. Lemp Brewing Company. However, he wasn't finished making the small brewery into an empire. William relocated the entire operation and brewing company to the Cherokee and Damon No Place Caves. By 1875, Lemp was the leading beer company in St. Louis, producing 42,000 barrels of beer.
42,000 barrels of beer on the wall.
Jesus. 42.
William married Julia Fikert on December 3rd, 1861, and they moved into the house built and owned by her father, Jacob Fikert, which would later become known as the Lemp Mansion, and it still stands today at 3322 Damon No Place. For important reference as we dive into the ghost of Lemp Mansion, it is important to remember that the Lemp Mansion was only home to William Lemp Sr., his family, and Charles Lemp. It was also made into offices for Lemp Brewery. So the first thing we can debunk is this idea of the Lavender Lady haunting the hallways of the house because she never lived in it.
Dude, you said that in the Monkey Boy episode.
Well, yeah, but once again, reiteration is important because these are the facts. And like they spread lies, we're going to spread the truth.
Oh, that sounds good.
I like that.
Billy and Lillian Hanlon lived in Adam's old mansion. In 1877, Lemp Brewery was the 19th largest brewery in the country, while Anheuser-Busch was rapidly approaching at number 32. A misconception from a book called Egan's Rats claims that the Lemps were criticizing Budweiser beer. However, Adolphus Busch and William Lemp were lifelong friends, as evidenced by their consistent presence at major global brewing conferences. Aside from their friendship, William Lemp Sr. was close to Captain Frederick Pabst. Their connection was so strong that William's daughter, Hilda Lemp, married Captain Frederick Pabst's son, Gustav. William's favorite child was also named after him, Frederick.
Well, I mean, Frederick, we've said it, I think, multiple times now that Frederick was the apple of the eye.
Yes.
So I want to take people into the mausoleum right now and understand, like, the mausoleum is the largest mausoleum in Bell Fountain Cemetery.
And the most expensive.
And the difference between a cemetery and a graveyard?
the graveyard is attached to a church.
And a cemetery.
Doesn't have a church attached.
I think you guys figured that out on your own. So that's something we get asked a lot. Cemeteries, graveyards. Graveyards has churches. Cemeteries don't. Pretty easy. But the reason why I'm bringing up the Frederick mausoleum is because it's basically built for him. But this is the ambition of William Lemp Sr. He actually builds this thing with 32 spaces.
Yes.
He thinks the family is going to be huge.
And they don't end up being that big.
Because only 16 slots are actually filled in that major mausoleum.
Yeah. And even a couple of his kids aren't buried there.
And if you're listening from maybe another state, or you just tuned in and you found our podcast and you really like these little radio show things that we're doing, we would love some sponsors. So, hey, go ahead and click The Haunted Garage on IG. Give us a follow. That'd be great. Reach out to us at askus@hauntedgarage.net if you want to be a third-party segment, if you want to sponsor the show. We've got a lot more stuff coming up with Lemp stuff. But also, I do want to point out one thing before I go back into the mausoleum. Next week's episode is actually going to be Bonnie and Clyde. We're going back into some Haunted Garage stuff. Guys are like, hey, where are the haunted cars at? And I'm like, bro, we're going to get them. So we're going to do that one.
We're going to do that?
Yes, we're going to do Bonnie and Clyde.
Bonnie and Clyde.
It kind of happens around the same time.
It's about the same time.
Sorry, I
think they say smeh a lot.
Exactly. There's a lot of hey. Hey, put your gun down, see?
Yeah, and see? Then,
like, when does that end, though, right? Like, when? did the Lemps talk like that? Put the beer down, see? Like,
some of them probably did.
Well, then get over here and stop attacking those men over there, you know?
Probably. Stop feeding the chimp live birds in front of our kid. Yeah.
She's got the broad Atlantic. Yeah, Billy. But so going back into the mausoleum, the reason why Frederick is important, and I do want to point this out because Dan Fuller over there, who gives the best tours. So if you've not been to Bell Fountain Cemetery, this is a guy's tour you want to be on. He actually opens up the mausoleum for people. You can walk in and he's going to explain his story about Frederick. And I'm probably not going to do it as justice as great as Dan does it. Dan is a great historian, especially at the museum, or sorry, the mausoleum there in Bell Fountain. So where the placement of Frederick is kind of interesting, Jeremy.
Yes, it is.
And why is it interesting?
Because it's right at your heart level.
Right. So actually, he's on the left wall. So as you walk in, he's on the left. And where his slot is on the mausoleum is the same level as William's heart.
Yep.
And so this is built in 1901. There's a big bronze statue outside of it, this huge granite. You can't miss it, honestly. It's huge.
It's very impressive.
Yeah, and it also sits right in front of the Wainwright, who was built by Frank.
By Frank Wainwright.
Yeah, so you actually get some architecture right there. We won't really get into Wainwright, but Wainwright, he built that for Charlotte. Charlotte was actually, aside from Lillian Hanlon being one of the most beautiful women, Charlotte Wainwright was actually supposed to be a very, very beautiful woman as well. So he loved her with all his life, and he built that Atlantis-type-looking mausoleum for her, too. So it's really pretty. It's right on Mausoleum Row. Can't miss it. It's really cool. So the reason why I'm bringing all of this up is because we've mentioned before that Frederick really wasn't part of the brewery when he started getting sick.
That's because he was living in California.
Right. So he was first living in Colorado. Remember, and he got good at Colorado. Yep. He really got favorable. And the doctor said, you know what? You should move up to California. So right before Frederick dies, he's actually out in Sacramento, Pasadena, goes all around and is shooting photography.
Is it true that good things go to California to die?
Jesus. Basically, what happened in California... He's taking pictures, and I would love to know what he was shooting and what those pictures look like. I wonder if anybody has those somewhere.
If you do, please contact us.
Yeah, I would love to see what Frederick's, I mean, he had a great eye. I believe we have a picture that he might have taken of the whole family. It's really the only family photo that we know that exists, and we're going to post that on Corn of the Macabre. So make sure you're visiting hauntedgarage.net. There is some merch on there. We have some hoodies on there. That really does help our show, guys. We're a paid program, so we want to keep really enforcing that message. We'd like to stay on the air. We'd like to stay keep doing this, but of course, you know, that comes at a cost to us. So check out what we're doing online. Check out, we're going to be at a couple car shows coming up soon. We got a lot of other stuff going. I'm going to mention it one more time. Follow us on Instagram at The Haunted Garage. Now, as we move into this, I'm going to do that next segment. I'm going to give you the life of William, because I think he is one of the most prolific businessmen in St. Louis. And I really kind of want to do a deep dive into William as he was seen by the business world,
right?
But also what people wrote about him. And I'm going to give that to you first before we kind of get into the last segment here, which will be his suicide leading up to that suicide, and then the repercussions of what happens after that suicide. And you'll kind of know what's going on with William. And then we'll talk about Billy very, very briefly, because we're going to go into Bonnie and Clyde. And then we'll go back into Billy. Yep. And then Billy, after Billy, we will do Charles. Yeah, so you'll have all the suicides here in May. You'll kind of understand exactly what history said, how it happened. It's the most important thing, especially as ghost hunters, as researchers, if you're just getting into the paranormal field, the most important thing you do is you be the largest skeptic in the room. You pull your own research. Never believe anything a tour guide gives you. This is I was just watching this new show on Netflix, and you know, Troy Taylor, who's a buddy of ours, we've been at his stuff too. He's actually in that show. It's kind of cool to see Troy. And Troy was actually doing something that, you know, Troy is a money guy. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, he's writing 1,000 books a day. So I don't know how he does it, but, you know, print and press in the basement or something. But he's actually on here debunking the Chloe.
The
Myrtle Plantation in Louisiana. Yeah. So check out that series. I think it's called Unexplained Mysteries or something. We'll get the right name for you. Check it out. Troy does a great job out there. A little shout out to Troy and what all he's doing for ghost hunting tours in Alton, Illinois. So in a couple weeks here, guys, we're going to be doing our own ghost tour in Alton, Illinois. And so we will be reporting back on that. Hopefully Dan Klein will be joining us. He's kind of the master over there. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Haunted Garage, the William Lemp episode. I know you guys are out there going, wow, I didn't know that these two guys that work on cars knew so much about Lemps.
It's because we work on cars and we like beer.
Yeah, I mean, so you drink beer when you work on cars, and now, you know, you start to understand certain things and aspects about the Haunted Garage. And you're like, well, when are you guys going to do a episode on, you know, a haunted car? I said, well, we have one out there already, but next weekend we are going to do Bonnie and Clyde. We mentioned that already in the first segment, but it's a very fun, exciting episode. This car is actually in Alcatraz East Museum in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee.
No.
No, you're going to say Little Reno, right?
It's Reno.
But it's not. He actually bought it.
Oh, this is a new development.
Yes. So he has now the Bundy Beetle. Bundy's Beetle. Remember that episode? Yep.
That sure enough do.
The worst episode we've ever done. It's got like 58 views.
Come on, guys. Ted Bundy is everybody's favorite serial killer except for me.
I know. What? All right.
Yeah, so he's my favorite.
So in this row, he has Bundy's Beetle. He has the Bonnie and Clyde car. He has O.J. Simpson.
He has the Bronco?
He has the Bronco.
But O.J., can finally rest now that his wife's killer is dead.
That's for sure. I guess he thought the murderer was a caddy because he spent a lot of time on the golf course. We'll cover OJ. No, we won't. I don't really think his name deserves to be anywhere, actually. I think it's pretty gross that the person, anybody that's RIPing that guy, when we fully know that he basically killed Nicole and Ron. So we lived through that, man. That was crazy.
We were in high school.
Yeah.
We watched it on the news. Yeah, well, actually, they showed the whole freaking trial.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really a way. Yeah, court TV, man. I mean, that was their big, you know, that's what made them huge.
I mean, Judge Lance Ito. Why do I know who he is?
Exactly. So not that anything else about the Lemps is on trial here, but we thought that we would give a little background, a little acumen about who William Lemp is, the ghost. So if you're going to go to a place and research ghost, I think the best way to do it, Jeremy, is to actually kind of dig deep.
And look into the history.
Let's look at how people viewed this person. Because as me and Jeremy will always tell you,
about Ghost and the shows that we've done. I did an awesome podcast recently, mostly superheroes. Check that out. I think I posted that a couple times on our IG at the Haunted Garage. Follow that and you'll see some posts that me and him had done before. Had a great time over there with Mostly Superheroes. Really good. I got really deep into some darker stuff that we'll get into in the months to come. We're waiting for, you know, the spooky season to get into really some dark stories and make you guys get scared again. But for right now, I really want to give you guys a taste of how we do some researching, because as me and Jeremy will always tell you on Ghost Hunts, as in life, so in death. So if you're a good person, chances are you're going to be a good spirit if you choose to stay with us. If you choose to transition on, of course, we probably lose you till we die. So without further ado, Jeremy, may I go into William's life?
I mean, it seems weird, but go ahead.
All right. William and Julia had five sons and three daughters. Mr. Lemp was always devoted to the welfare of his family, considering no personal sacrifice or effort too great if it would ensure the welfare and happiness of his wife and children. He also believed that friendship was a natural capacity, which he expressed with strength, thus bringing sunshine to the lives of those around him. No individual was more dedicated to the progress and development of St. Louis than William J. Lemp. He generously supported public projects and worked to advance the city's interest. He was a member of the Merchants Exchange, serving as twice its vice president and on numerous important committees. His involvement with that influential body made him prominently associated with many efforts aimed at advancing the manufacturing and commercial interests of St. Louis. Additionally, he served as a director of the Louisiana Purchase Exposition, but his primary focus was on initiatives to utilize the city's facilities, opportunities, and resources. No businessman in the city was more well-known or highly esteemed, particularly by his business associates. He was completely devoid of ostentation and was notably modest and unassuming. A kind-hearted spirit inspired him to generously support numerous charities and give countless gifts to individuals. However, Mr. Lemp was averse to publicizing these acts of kindness. He gave not because of the sense of duty, but because of the deep interest in his fellow man and their welfare. His nature was kind by a desire to assist others less fortunate than himself. He spent a lot of time touring Alaska and traveled extensively throughout the United States. He was always very interested in the progress of his adopted country, realizing that it was making history while the glory of other lands was largely a thing of the past. On February 13, 1904, Mr. Lemp passed away at the age of 67 years old. His death marked the loss of a significant figure in St. Louis history. Despite not claiming any extraordinary abilities, he seized opportunities that others overlooked and secured a prominent position in the business world. The late Mr. Lemp was remembered as a fair and compassionate employer. Hundreds of his employees expressed genuine sorrow upon his passing. He was also a respected member of several social clubs in the city. William J. Lemp Sr. did not live a nefarious and salacious life. He was not demonic and cutthroat in the business world. Instead, he encouraged German immigrants to succeed in the brewing business. He took pride in the craft, and unlike Adolphus, he brewed beer and was a master of it. He faced a lot of tragedy with the loss of his son, Frederick Lemp. This is evidenced by the mausoleum he built for him. What's more, Frederick was interred on the left side of the tomb at exactly the height of William's heart. 3 years later, William would lose his best friend, Captain Frederick Pabst, in 1904. Some believe the grief was overwhelming and he ended his life with a .38 revolver to the head in the upstairs bedroom of the Lemp Mansion. The belief in ghosts is often influenced by the way a person lived. William wanted to be rid of this world, and although I do not condone suicide, I can say I empathize with him. His death was attributed to the grief and impulse to end his life. We believe that as in life, so in death. If, and I say if, William is one of the ghosts in the Lemp Mansion, I do not think he is malevolent. Nothing like doom and gloom to get you happy.
I mean, it makes me smile.
The thing about William is that when you understand, these are the things we don't talk about, right? And I don't want to really stress or beat that dead horse that we've done over the couple weeks here, but that is who William was.
Correct.
That's who he was.
Right. He was just a good dude and a good businessman.
Yeah, and he really wanted to make everyone be successful. I think that what we lose in today's world is this idea of the American dream. And not to get too political or stand on a soapbox, what I will say is people often confuse our flag.
Right.
The American flag is not a staple, and it's not something that is considered done. The American flag is an example of an ideology. It is the idea of freedom. It doesn't say that it's done. It doesn't say that this is the way we do things. It is this pledge that we live to be free. And when we see the difference between immigrants of the past to immigrants today, it is very different.
Right. The way they came here is different.
Yep. Yeah, they just didn't break into our country and run across the border.
Yeah, overrunning a bunch of military guys.
Exactly. And these are the people that are defending our country getting brutalized by people that want a free handout. And so I'm kind of caught up in this idea. Me and you are both from immigrant families. I'm from Italian family, and my grandfather reminds me very much of William Lemp, where he took every precaution to be successful.
Right.
And my grandfather was very successful in the restaurant business, and I'm proud to be his grandson. And I think that the thing that he taught us, although I only had very limited time with my grandfather, but the things that I remember about him is this pledge of, if you've lived anywhere else, you realize that this is the greatest country on earth. It is the reason why our military troops are being brutalized at the border.
Right. People want to be here.
And so I have a real problem with people standing up in my country, in Michigan, where our beloved cars are built.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about death to America.
Yeah.
This is not the immigrants of the past. This is not the Lemp family. This is not my family. It's not your family. These are different types of people. These are illegals. These are people that want to take advantage of systems of government and make this country like the one they just left.
And if that country was so good,
yeah,
why did you leave?
Right.
And you're going to come here and try and turn this country into the dump that you left.
Exactly. So although you can be proud of your heritage, my heritage is the Italians, but next to my Italian flag, the American flag is above it.
Correct.
It'll always be above it. And I think that the message that's why I love that we're on this station, because we identify with a lot of the radio host on the station. I listen to this basically streaming when I'm at my work computer, when I'm surrounded by people that I don't necessarily agree with, but politically, but personally, I can get along with anyone.
Right.
The difference that I have with people is that when you compare that and say these lines like, well, everybody's an immigrant. Yes. But the difference is that our family did it the right way.
Right. We didn't run over the border.
Right. We came in here, and both my family's names on both sides, my mother's and my father's, my grandparents are on Liberty Island. They're on the brass plaques. Both my grandparents came over the correct way. And although my name was changed, okay, my last name is actually not Cambletta, it's Del Peruta, but my name was changed because my grandfather on my dad's side came over here as an orphan. And so my last name, Cambletta, means change the bed. It means cambia, vieta, means change the bed, like orphans naturally do. And I'm proud of that heritage. I'm proud that he was given that name. He felt it sounded so American, and he felt top of the world. And he still had to fight for stuff. and he still had to do the things that, that William did. And so right. when I look at this immigration, right, because my grandparents came over right at the turn of the century, so right when all of this is going on, right? When they come over here, I am almost certain that my grandfather, and probably yours, definitely yours, drank limp beer.
Oh, I know they did because I have a limp corkscrew. Yeah. That was my great-great-grandfather's.
Yeah, and I think that that is one of the most spectacular things ever. When we come up after the break, we are going to get more into less politics, but more into this story in our long segment about William Lemp's suicide and diving deeper into those things. Hey, welcome back to Haunted Garage. Thanks for my TED Talk last segment.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, man, but
it was
like,
good times.
I'm, you know, it kind of coincided with, you know, just talking about some of these amazing immigrants in our own backyard here in St. Louis that did incredible things that people should be inspired by it to want to do.
And instead, all they want to do is, oh, he committed suicide. Now he's a ghost.
Yeah, exactly.
Good job.
Well, there's some interesting stuff. And I'm actually reading from another newspaper from Darlington, Missouri. You ever heard of this place?
Where is Darlington?
No idea.
I have never heard of Darlington, Missouri.
Well, they're going to write about the funeral of the Brewer Lemp.
You don't say, do you?
Mm-hmm. It's not that long. It says, the funeral of William J. Lemp, the millionaire brewer who died by his own hand Saturday, was held Monday afternoon from the family residence. The services were private, as in all of the services.
Right.
A lot of people don't know that when all of these people died, especially in the suicide cases, it was all private. It was mostly family.
Right.
This is something that we don't talk about either. So how they dealt with that is something completely innate to the personalities of the Lemp families. A lot of people don't realize that every one of them spoke fluent German.
Oh, I would expect that.
Yeah.
Especially knowing that.
Even though they were born in America.
Oh, that, I mean, Fabian speaks fluent Spanish.
Maybe. So only members of the family and close friends being present. Interment was in Bellefontaine Cemetery, and employees of Mr. Lemp bore the body to the grave. His employees were his pallbearers.
Because he was well known to, like, go down on the floor and work, you know, side by side with pretty much everybody in the factory.
Yeah. And I think that's also a brilliant type of thing. Here's a newspaper clipping from Salt Lake City. Grief drives rich brewer to death. William J. Lemp, president of the Lemp Brewing Company of St. Louis, despondent over deaths of his favorite son and lifelong friend suicides.
Seeing they, you know, all these ghost tours, and I've been visiting Lemp Mansions since I was in early teens, maybe even like 11, and they never mention Pabst.
No.
Not once. They don't mention Pabst.
No, we have a really cool picture of, I don't think many people have that picture, but it's actually Captain Frederick Pabst and William Lemp together, and they're both kind of smiling and cheering on, and right. I don't know where they're really standing. I want to believe it's in Milwaukee, but Captain Frederick Pabst basically towered Lemp. He was tall.
Right.
He was not a small German, but, you know, William was. So he wasn't the tallest man. But it's an interesting picture. We're going to put that on Corn on the Macabre. Hey, you checking out the website? TheHauntedGarage.net? Go ahead and buy a hoodie. Do something with us. Read all about the Macabre. So I'm going to put that on. I don't know why I do that voice. It's very strange.
Macabre.
Salt Lake City Tribune, St. Louis, February 13th. William J. Lemp, president of the Lemp Brewing Company, committed suicide today at his residence, 3322 South 8th Street.
That's not correct.
By shooting in the right temple with a revolver. He died an hour later.
3322 8th Street? Wasn't it 13th Street, Dimmonell Place?
Yeah. But this is what, you know, I'm stressing the importance of going through some of these articles in our last segment here is because if you're doing research, you have to understand that there is no internet.
Right, back then?
Right, yeah, so they're getting secondhand stuff. So
Al Gore invented that in the
60s. Right. Yeah, don't ever forget that. You know, that's his big claim to fame. That and, you know, that Florida would be underwater by 2004.
Isn't it? Aren't we in an ice age right now?
We are in the fourth ice age.
We're in the, because in the, I mean, they even.
According to my fiance, we're always in the ice age in this house.
So. The Clash in London's Calling, they say, in one of the lines, they say, the ice age is coming, you better prepare.
Yeah.
That was like, what, 78, it's 79 crazy. Right there?
Yeah, so when you're reading these different papers from different, it's very important to do that when you're doing research. We have subscriptions to Ancestry and Newspapers.com, a bunch of other stuff that we pull from, and it's really amazing to see what other people's interpretations of it. Now, they probably read something. This came out on Sunday, February 14th, so this is the next day. This is Valentine's Day. And I just want to put this out there too. I believe that Elsa's born on February 8th. Okay, so okay. This is right by her birthday. And this is really upsetting if you're, you know what I'm saying? This is right around your birthday and your dad is going to end his life. So pretty crazy for her and what she had to deal with. So Mr. Lemp, who was 68 years old and native of Germany, he's actually from Prussia, which was a state of Germany. A lot of people don't know that either. They think he's assumed he's
because that was before Germany was a country.
Correct. So this was a state of Germany in Prussia. So a little bit different than people's interpretations. He has lived in St. Louis for 48 years. He stood high in the business and social circles, was reputed to millionaire. It seems that he was alone in his room when the shot was fired, complaining of not feeling well. He had not arisen as early as the other members of the family. This is showing signs of depression right there. Breakfast had been served, and the sons had gone to their duties at the offices, and Mrs. Lemp had gone uptown. The servants were busy themselves about the daily task. A shot was heard from the direction of Mr. Lemp's room. The servants who hurried to the apartment found Mr. Lemp lying on the floor, a revolver clutched in his right hand, and a bullet wound in his temple. One of the servants ran to the brewer's office nearby and summoned the two sons, Edward and William.
Edward. Son Edward.
So,
is a nickname for Edward Zeke? Just asking for a friend.
Kind of fun though, right? So as when you're doing the ghost thing, guys. And yeah, we could sit up here and tell ghost stories all day long, and we will have some bedtime stories for you. But the thing that I want you to take away from it, you know, if you're getting into it, is that you have to approach ghost hunting as you have all the information going into a ghost hunt. Don't expect these people to hand you the facts. They're trying to sell you on entertainment.
Right.
But when you go in there being like, I'm not going to look for this kid Breckenridge, okay, at the Crescent in Eureka.
He didn't even die there.
He didn't even die there. I actually went by his grave with Greg when we went to go pick up the 70 Duster.
Oh, did you really?
Right in Kentucky.
You found it?
Breckenridge County.
Nice.
So it's interesting. We didn't get to stop, of course, because, you know, we had to pick up a Duster because that's what we do, pick up haunted cars.
Yay.
Right. Another one to the collection. Now have 9 cars. Great. So Mr. Lemp lost interest in life 3 years ago when his son Frederick died. He lost interest in life. Interesting. The latter was the brewer's favorite son, the superintendent of the brewery, and the chief reliance of his father. That's not true. He was living in California. He died suddenly of heart failure, and the blow to the father was so severe that he never recovered from it. At first, he seemed to resist the impulse to withdraw from active life, but after a time, he yielded to it and was seldom seen at the office. Without having a disease which could be diagnosed, he became feeble and gradually became despondent. When Frederick Pabst, the Milwaukee brewer, died on January 1st, Mr. Lemp was affected almost as much as he had been by the death of his son. He attended the funeral and on his return was even more despondent than ever. After the death of Mr. Lemp, none but relatives and very close friends of the family were admitted to the residence besides the two sons and his widow. One daughter, who married a son of Captain Pabst, survives William J. Lemp. They're talking about Hilda Lemp, of course. And this is out of basically Salt Lake City Tribune. When we're going through these suicides, we could read right here Here's another one from North Carolina. This one's interesting too. The rash act was caused by despondency brought on by the death of his favorite son 3 years ago and the death of Frederick Pabst in January. Mr. Lem stood high in social and financial circles. So getting a little bit more to the truth of it, when I go and dive into Missouri and I go to the Post-Dispatch, you're going to get more formal story because you're on the ground here. So it is a very sad situation. I'll read this little brief thing. A man closely identified with the interest of the firm yesterday gave a value of $6 million as a conservative estimate of the value of the plant. Aside from the plant, Mr. Lemp was interested in other breweries, chiefly located in Texas, and in large system of ice plants. So this kind of going into it, actually the $6 million was what the brewery was actually worth right at the time. But when you look at it from the standpoint of how much money was actually done, when it was all said and done, it was right around $12 million that he left. As everybody has listened to the last episode, he does not have a will. He simply left a letter to his, and I don't know when that letter was written. It's not a suicide letter, so let's be clear on that. It just says that if I'm dead or if I die, my wife will know what to do with the funds. So William's death is something that was very shocking to the community, but it also wasn't a surprise. The despondency had left people that knew him prior to the deaths of Frederick. He was a very different, he's a changed person. And it's hard to kind of be, he's self-loathing at that point, right? It's hard to kind of snap out of that, you know? And a lot of people say, well, it's kind of selfish, you know, that he wasn't thinking about the other seven children and his wife. And, you know, he still had all these other things to look forward to and the possibility. Because at this point, he has a grandson. His grandson's 4 years old, and that's William III. So, you know, and Hilda has children. Right. So he has grandchildren. And he has Marion, okay? And that was a weird story that we covered last episode where she didn't get anything as far as when he dies.
He's like,
Yeah. So I mean, if there is, and I think I said it in, you know, the first segment here is like, I don't think his spirit, even after reading all these things on how he died, I don't think it's malevolent.
No. If he's there, he's very fatherly, I would think he would be.
Or despondent.
Yeah, sad.
Yeah, sorrowful. I mean, you had an experience. We have a couple minutes left here. We have about 6 minutes before we have to tidy this one up and cut out of here. But if you are listening, we appreciate you. Please follow us. Please reach out to us. Ask us at hauntedgarage.net. If you have a topic in St. Louis you'd like us to cover and think, because we're the brainiacs and researchers and historians that we are, we can actually put together a pretty good episode for you. Please feel free to reach out to us at askus@hauntedgarage.net. If you have a private investigation, something going on in your house, we would love to check it out and do it. We are actually working with somebody right now as we speak from this radio show. That's pretty cool. So with that, I'm going to kind of turn it over to Jeremy. You had an experience with not only Paranormal Blue, which you'll explain, but you also saw something, and you were with a group of people too.
Yes.
And I think it was your ex-wife, and she actually saw it.
No, she didn't, but my parents saw stuff.
Okay.
Because we had, I think there was three. So we did a Monday night tour at Limp.
Betsy.
Probably, 15 years ago, probably. And we were in the Williams Senior Suite. We're all kind of standing around the bed. And it wasn't a big group. There was probably 12 people, including Betsy.
I'm going to stop you there. Mm-hmm. So if you're not living in St. Louis and you're listening to us, can you explain in the mansion where would Williams Suite be?
So if you go up the main staircase to the second floor and you'll go back around, it is actually the room that is to the right of the staircase. So you have to actually go back around, walk towards the front of the building, and then turn into that room.
Okay.
And we're all standing around the bed, which is allegedly where their bed was, where he would have committed suicide. And the room got darker without the lights dimming. And we all noticed that there was like a mist up on the ceiling, but it was blocking out the light. So that was really cool because that's like the first thing that happened. Like they give a history tour and then you kind of walk around the first floor and then we went upstairs and then this is like the first like paranormal thing that happened.
And just so everybody's aware, the Lent Mansion is actually closed on Mondays.
Yes.
And they only do the, Betsy does that tour and it starts roughly around, I think 7 p.m.
Yeah, I think it is 7.
So no one's in, no one is there. Nobody is rent. There might be somebody that actually is renting the room.
Yes.
But in most cases, when we've been there, maybe one or two people are actually staying there or none. So you, it's a very intimate affair and you kind of have free roam of this mansion. It is a very unique venture to do this type of tour when Betsy does the dark room sessions and stuff like that.
Which is the next thing that happened.
So you're in the room, you see this mist. Is this mist just like a fog or...
It's kind of a gray mist, and it stays right around the light. Hmm. But it visibly dims the room. Everybody noticed it.
That's creepy.
Yeah, and there was like 12 of us.
Ooh.
So we go throughout, and we do that floor, and we go upstairs, and we're going to do the dark room session. And so she does her thing. She blows out the candle. And a few minutes later, I look to... So I have my back against the wall that would face Demino. Mm. And so to my left is the front of the house. And there is a door to the eaves right next to me, probably maybe 4 feet away. And Betsy says, Charles is here. And I turn, and there is a blue glowing figure with no head and nothing below the knees. And it walks right past me. I could have stuck my hand out and touched it. And oof. I was like, oh my God. And my ex-wife is next to me. And I'm like, do you see this? And she's like, no, my eyes are closed.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. And so it goes, it stands next to her. And I'm like, oh, I can see this. I can see it. I'm a psychic. But I saw it, and it was that was it, so it was the paranormal blue. Okay. So this it's this tone of blue that over the years I've been ghost hunting for a long time. It's this just this one tone of blue that ends up happening at these different places. I've seen it at Tri-County. I've seen it at Kay's house. I've seen it there. I saw it at Six Flags. Mm. So I've seen it. I can't even tell you how many times, but it's always the same like glow of blue.
Crazy. So within the last minute and a half we have before we wrap the show, do you believe that it was Charles? And the fact that the head is missing, is that just maybe a materialization thing? Or is it indicating that because Charles and William both shot themselves in the head, is that any indication as to why their head might be missing?
I mean, it could be, but I also, he didn't have any legs. Like, he had thighs, but he didn't have any feet.
What was he wearing?
He was wearing a vest and had a tie, and I could see, like, a chain, like he had a pocket watch. It's crazy when this kind of stuff happens, because sometimes when you see a ghost, you don't even realize it's a ghost until it's over.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, did you see that? Yeah. Where did that go?
Yeah. In most cases, I mean, one of the most famous haunts is in Pugin's Porch up in Charleston, South Carolina. And it's haunted by both a dog, but also this person that always comes down the staircase. So, hey, if you have haunts out there, if you've been to the Lent Mansion, let us know. From all of us here at Haunted Garage, I'm Frankie.
And I'm Jeremy.
We'll be seeing you.